Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller. Really pleased to welcome back today Dick Zondag. Dick is president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. They've been in business more than 100 years. And I tell you what, whenever he comes by, we always have a lot of fun. We can talk about a whole variety of things. We can talk about planting your garden for spring. We can talk about different varieties, vegetable or flower. We can talk about trees and shrubs. I hope you'll join in. Reach us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Dick, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Nice to be back, Larry.
How are things going at Jung's? Are you into that? Well, you're in the catalog season.
Yeah,
that's
catalogs
for sure.
Are in the mail, and we're starting to ramp up a little bit. We're, doing between 3,000 and 4,000 orders a day. And so there are a lot of people out there planting their gardens and ordering their seeds and things. So, we're starting to get into that season.
Well, it's good.
It's a good thing, too, yeah.
You know, spring can't be too far behind.
Nope. This cold weather kind of puts a little damper on your thoughts of spring, but it's nice to think about getting out there in that garden and raising those vegetables or watching the flowers grow and stuff. So, yeah, it does lighten up your day.
Well, Stephen in Rochester, Wisconsin, has a question for you, so I'm going to take us right to Steve. Hi, Stephen.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hey. Have trouble with my pole beans, my Blue Lake and Kentucky Wonders. I'm getting 20 to 30% of the pods are flat and woody.
Okay. Now you're picking them while they're before they go over the hill, because that's usually what happens when they start to mature or get a little bit over the hill.
Yeah, about the size of a pencil is the way I like them.
Yeah. Do you use inoculant on the seed when you plant it?
Are you there?
Hello?
I think we lost Stephen.
Oh, okay.
Somehow managed. I don't know what happened.
Well, I guess, you know, what I was going to tell him is that, you know, beans are a legume, and sometimes you need that fertility that the legumes form when you inoculate them with the nitrogen-fixing bacteria. So,
okay.
Try, if he doesn't inoculate the seed when he plants it, that would be something to try. And then I guess try to pick them a little bit on the immature side, because usually when they're when they go over the hill, they start to get a little bit woody. So you should pick them before you can start to see the shape of the seeds.
Okay, there we go. Let's go to Mary in Brown Deer. Mary, hi to you.
Hi, I have a question about rhubarb.
Okay.
I'm going to be getting some of the more old-fashioned type, the more sour type that's in the catalog.
Okay.
And I just wanted tips on what would be the ideal amount of light, and I have clay soil, which I've been amending, but right. I just wanted tips on getting the best success out of my rhubarb plant.
Okay, well, rhubarb like as much sunlight as you can possibly give them, so I would say anything over a half a day is really good.
Okay.
Rhubarb are heavy feeders, so you like to keep them fertilized and growing well. With a clay soil, you want to add soil, sand to the soil, and a lot of compost so that they're in a nice loose soil. And then the other thing with rhubarb is they tend to grow very fast, and so every 3 or 4 years, you should be digging half the clump out and either dividing it and replanting it, and that way you can rejuvenate and keep the stalks nice and large. When they start to throw a lot of flowers, it's usually a sign that they're starting to get to mature, and then you've got to go back and rejuvenate them. And so you just, in the springtime, before they start to grow too much, you just take a sharp shovel and go right down in the middle of the clump and dig half the clump out and leave half the clump there, and away they go.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know about the dividing part.
Yep.
Yeah.
thanks
a lot.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mary. Thank you for calling. Frank in Fort Edwards, we're on to you now. Hi.
Good morning. I have a question for the guest. I don't know. Something has been puzzling me. Last year and the year before, I grow beets.
Okay.
They're spaced 3-4 inches in the row when I get through thinning them. But some of the beets don't get any bigger than marbles, and some of them turn out to be just, you know, really good size, 2.5, 3, 3.5 inch beets.
Okay, what variety are you using?
Oh, I'm using the green leaf Lutz.
Oh, the Lutz green leaf, okay.
But I also grew Ace.
Okay, Red Ace. That should be more uniform than that, because that's a hybrid.
Yeah.
Is your soil loose?
Yeah, it's sandy.
Okay, well then that's the
fair amount
the
of
best,
organic matter over the years.
Yeah, that's the best kind for root crops.
I was wondering if I didn't plant the seeds quite deep enough.
No, I actually beets and carrots and those sorts of vegetables. They like to be planted quite shallow because then the leaves, as it germinates, get to the surface faster and they start to grow better. So I would say an inch or at the very most an inch and a half deep. Now, in the sandy soil, you could probably go a little bit deeper than that, but that shouldn't make a difference in the size of the beets, especially if they're different size in the rows. Another thing that you could try is fertilizing the beets as they're growing, maybe side dressing once or twice during the summertime, especially on sandy soils that are that don't have a lot of organic matter. The nutrients aren't held in the root zone very well, and so every time it rains, it kind of leaches the fertility out of the soil. So maybe try using a regular well-balanced garden fertilizer like a 5-10-5 or a triple 10. And then the organic matter really makes a big difference.
Well, Dick, the little beets were kind of sitting up on top of the ground.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe that is the problem. Maybe they aren't planted deep enough. Do you? You make a furrow with a hoe, I'm assuming.
Oh, hoe or a stick, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of thinking I'm going to plant them deeper next year.
Well, what I would do then is just make sure when you're planting them, I always make sort of a V shape in the packet when I'm putting the beets in. Just make sure that they all go to the bottom of the furrow.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, makes sense. Thank you, Frank, for calling. June in Reedsburg, we're on to you now. Hi, June.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about a weeping birch tree.
Okay.
I've only seen one, and I thought it was beautiful, but I don't see them around in southern Wisconsin.
Right.
Do they not grow well in southern Wisconsin?
We used to sell weeping birch, but the problem with weeping birch is that it's a European birch, and the European birch are very susceptible to the bronze birch borer.
Oh.
And so you get these really beautiful trees up in about 8 to 10 years, and then all of a sudden the top dies out of them, and then pretty soon the tree is half dead, and then I would say within 10 to 12 years the whole tree is dead. So that's why you don't see many weeping birch anymore, because they're very short lifespan because of the bronze birch borer.
Thank you.
All right, there you go, June. Thank you for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. You can do it that way, too. We have some folks that have gone to my Facebook page with questions, too, and we will get to those, too. But Tom in Janesville's up next. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, good morning. I have some dwarf tropical fruit trees, you know, the dwarf banana and lime and Meyer lemon. And I'm wondering what advice you can give me on the care and feeding of those. This is going on the third year, and, you know, they're little 5-inch sticks when I get them, and they're about a foot tall, foot and a half now. But I've had no fruit, and I get no... Do I need to put grow lights on them in the winter, or what?
Yeah, the tropical type fruits are used to growing out in full sunlight, and when you're growing them in the house, you have a very dry environment, and they're used to a moist or humid environment. You have very low sunlight because they're used to being outside, and you're inside. The fertilizer that I would use on them is a product called Muracid or something that says evergreen fertilizer on it, because they need the manganese and the iron that will cause them to get nice and green, plus a little bit of nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium, which are the three main elements. But They need to have that extra iron and manganese so that they turn nice and green. Keep them in the more as sunny a window as you possibly can. And I think probably with, as with most tropical plants, you don't want to have them right in front of a forced air register, because that tends to dry the leaves out.
Okay.
All right.
That's it. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Mary in Whitewater, on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. I have 5 Arctic kiwi vines.
Okay.
And they're quite old, and they're mature now, and probably 2 or 3 of them I purchased from you.
Okay.
From your catalog, and then the other 2 probably came from another vendor.
Okay.
In the catalog, and 2 of them died, so I have 3 left.
Right.
The first one I put in is giant.
Okay.
And the other 2 are just sort of getting there. They're probably a year behind, maybe 2 years behind.
Right.
But the one that is big and beautiful got blossoms for the first time last spring, summer, and I thought, oh, wow, I'm going to have fruit finally.
Mm-hmm.
The blossoms all dropped off. There weren't any little capsules at all.
Right.
And then, of course, I got no fruit. So I was wondering, how can I tell if I have, I assume that was the female kiwi.
I'm assuming that it is, because the male kiwi doesn't have as large and showy of a blossom as the female.
So it, does the male have blossoms?
Yeah, of course it has blossoms. Mm-hmm. They're little little catkin-like
little
things,
Okay, so I was wondering,
how do you tell whether you got one or the other?
Yeah, if I even have 2 other males to make with it.
Yeah, the problem is with kiwi, they're vegetatively propagated. In other words, we take cuttings, so we know whether we're producing a female plant or a male plant. Once they're planted in the landscape, unless you keep the tag on them or you know what kind of flowers they have on them, you have a hard time telling whether they're male or female by the leaves.
Okay. Well, I know the tags blew off.
Yeah.
And then also, I don't think the tag said they were male or female. They just give the
right, the variety.
Botanical name, and then you're supposed to just trust the vendor that they gave you.
One of each.
Yeah.
That's what we do, is we, you know, we have, I think, a separate bin for the male and the female, so you get one of each.
Do you still sell them? Because I don't see them in your catalog.
You know, those things come and go. Just trying to see.
Take a look. Dick's taking a look here.
Yeah, we actually do have kiwi in the catalog.
Oh, do you?
On page 12. It says page 12, so...
Page 12 of the new catalog.
I'm assuming
I haven't gotten mine yet.
Well, if you haven't gotten one, you can go online and order them, too. We have the Arctic Beauty Kiwi. I was pretty sure we had that yet.
Well, I would prefer to wait till these mature, because they take so long.
Right.
When you send them, they're so tiny. And then you have to wait 4 years to get anything.
Kiwi is not a fruit that's like a pear or an apple or a plum tree. You know, it's not real vigorous in a cold climate. Most of the kiwis that we buy in the stores come from California or Australia or New Zealand, where they've got a longer growing season and a warmer climate.
Even the Arctic variety?
Yep. Well, the Arctic variety are not the fuzzy type. You don't get the fuzzy type fruit that you do in
I'm
the store.
They're naked
kiwi. You know, they don't have any fuzz on them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, that's what I'm anticipating.
Okay.
And the three that are left are doing beautiful.
Right.
When the growing season comes, but then they just don't.
Yeah, now we do have male plants available. You can order them. They're on page 12. We have the Arctic kiwi, and then we have 2 fruiting varieties in the male pollinator.
So you might want to take a look, and
you can go online too at junkseed.com and just put kiwi in the search box, and it'll take you right to them.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, Mary. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. Our guest here on Cynthia Schuster, by the way, is our on-air producer today for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest Dick Zondag on this edition of Garden Talk, talking about a whole variety of things with him today. I hope you'll join in with your question, your gardening question, at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Bill in Plover, Wisconsin next. Central Sands area, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, right.
Bill, what can we do for you?
Yes, I was wondering what fruit varieties would grow best in the sandy soils.
Okay, well, the hardiness zone is what you have to pay attention to in the Central Sands. You've got to have zone 4 or lower. And with fruit varieties, you have to pick the earlier maturing varieties because varieties like Red and Yellow Delicious are probably not going to mature in your area.
Oh, okay.
You know, the season isn't long enough. So you have to pick the earlier varieties. Like in apples, you take like the Harrelson Red or the McIntosh or Cortland's or, you know, anything in that maturity would work. Pears work really well on the Central Sands. The plums pretty... Most of the plums would work. As far as the soil is concerned, what you want to do is dig a hole and be sure and work some organic matter in the soil that you plant around the root system and put some fertilizer tablets. The big problem with sand is the water retention and the nutrient retention. What happens with a root system of a plant that goes into sand is it becomes very fibrous and goes a little bit deeper than it would if it was in a clay soil. The clay soil plants tend to be a much more coarse root system, and the roots stay closer to the surface because they can't go deeper because of the soil-air relationship in the soil. So it's just a matter with the Central Sands to keep that plant watered the first year or maybe the first 2 years so that it has sufficient water in the area where the roots are. And once the plant is established, the roots are going to go deeper and they're going to be more fibrous so they can take up the nutrients and the water that they need. So you don't have to stay away from a certain type of fruit. It's just that you may have to maintain it a little bit longer until the roots get down where it can take up the moisture that's there. But pick early varieties and make sure that the hardiness zone is 4 or lower.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks,
thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Mary and Nina, we're on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I actually have two questions. One I hope is quite quick. We have a white birch tree, and we were told by a neighbor that it needed to be injected with something.
Okay. The birch, especially if it's a paper, the European paper birch, are susceptible to two things, the bronze birch borer, which... there really is not a lot you can use for it anymore.
No.
The pesticides that we used to have all been removed from the market, so there isn't a whole lot you can do for that. I think what they're talking about is the birch leaf miner, which causes leaves to blister, and then you can actually pull the two layers of the leaf apart. And what you use for that is a systemic insecticide. It's just called Dicistan. And you don't inject it into the tree. It's a granular, looks like fertilizer, but it's an insecticide that the plant actually takes up in the plant sap. So when the birch leaf miner insect hatches, starts eating the plant, the insecticide is in the plant sap and will kill it. The birch leaf miner is not something that's going to kill the tree. It will cause the leaves to drop if you've got a lot of lesions on a leaf, but it's just something that's very unsightly. It usually, as a tree matures, it's usually a problem on younger trees than on mature trees.
Okay. My other question is there a variety of hops that can be grown in my area?
Oh, hops?
Yes. Yeah, we have hops in the catalog. It's a very fast growing vine, and the part that you use for brewing beer are the flower parts.
And I just like the smell.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they grow very rapidly, and I don't think they're hardy, but you'll just have to plant them every year.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Andy in Harper's Ferry, Iowa. Hi, Andy.
How you doing?
Good.
I'm interested in knowing, I think it's called anthracnose or something like that, but it's a disease that the black raspberries get. The red raspberries carry it, but they don't seem to get it. Do you have anything?
Black raspberries are quite susceptible to anthracnose, and Red raspberries are a little bit more resistant, but you want to, that's why you want to plant the blacks and the reds a little farther apart, because mm-hmm. normally when reds are by themselves, they won't get anthracnose. But because the blacks are more susceptible and both plants can get the disease, it'll come into the blacks and then it'll jump into the reds.
So Is there a cultural or cultivar, a special one that's maybe a little bit more resistant?
No, the reds are sort of resistant, so those are the ones that you'd want to plant if you're having problems. If you've got blacks, what you want to do is make sure that the black raspberries are in the morning sunlight
okay. So
that the foliage dries off early, because the way plant diseases, or at least most plant diseases work, is that the diseases are spread by spores. They're like little seeds, and they germinate in the dew in the morning. And if that spore, it has one opportunity to infect the plant, because if it starts to germinate and the little germ tube, which is called a haustoria, but it's just like a little root, if it gets into the leaf, you've got the disease. But if the leaves dry off by 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, it usually doesn't have enough time to get germinated and get into the leaf. So what you want to do is thin down the number of canes so that you don't have a lot of canes, and that way you get good air penetration, and then plant them where they get morning sunlight so that the leaves dry off. The blacks are more susceptible, but they tend to be able to handle it better than the reds. So plant them separately, and that should help.
Mm-hmm.
How about garlics? Can you plant them in the spring?
It's better if you plant them in the fall, but
you
can plant them in the spring also. If you plant them in the spring, what I would do is dig a couple of them up in the fall, and if they're not big enough, you just leave them in the ground for another year. They are perfectly hardy. They will go through the winter, and then they'll grow another year, and then they'll be fine the second year.
Thank you so much.
Yep, all right,
thanks for calling.
Yep, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. And let's see, we've got an email message here, I believe. Tana is a South Central Master Gardener from Monroe, and she emails this. She said, a friend is wondering if he could plant garlic bulbs he buys in the grocery store instead of buying them in a garden supply store. I don't think...
If I were really mercenary, I'd say no.
Can you?
Yeah,
actually...
Oh, yeah, you can. But the problem with most of the garlics that you get in the store is that they're grown in California, and the California garlics require a lot of sunlight and a lot of hot weather. And so if you're using the ones that you buy in the store, you're probably going to, it's probably going to be a 2-year process.
Okay.
Where the varieties that we handle and the varieties that a lot of people plant in their home gardens, especially in the north, are more suited for a shorter growing season and a cold winter. So the ones you buy in the store are mainly grown in California, Washington, and Oregon, where they've got long growing seasons and a lot of sunlight. But yeah, they will grow.
Chet in Green Bay, we are on to you. Hi, Chet.
Good morning. I'd like you to know that your catalog is my favorite winter reading material.
Oh, thank you.
I have two real simple questions.
Sure.
We are thinking about planting honeyberries as an alternative to blueberries, because we obviously can't raise blueberries here. And I can't find too much information about honeyberries.
Yeah, honeyberries are like blueberries, except they don't require quite as acid of soil, and they do blossom and fruit much earlier in the season, and the fruit is actually very close to blueberries. Although blueberries can be grown in Wisconsin, it's a lot of puttering around, because you have to acidify the soil, you have to prune them right after they blossom and fruit, or right after they're done fruiting, so that they produce new canes for next year, and the worst part about it is that once they start to get ripe, or before, even a little bit before they get ripe, flocks of birds will descend into your blueberry bushes and eat your blueberries. So most people that grow blueberries that are serious about it will net them or build a cage around them. I know my dad planted a bunch of blueberries and actually built a structure made out of poles and 2x4s, and then he would just throw netting around that, and then he'd get in there, and then once in a while a couple birds would get inside and eat all his blueberry stuff on it. But yeah, the blueberries are a little bit putzy, I guess you'd say, to grow, but the honeyberries don't. But you do have to have two varieties of honeyberry also.
Yes, I noticed that in your catalog.
Right.
The second question I have is I would really like to plant a row of blackberries, and I'm torn between your offerings of Jim and Jan, and then another berry called a Darrow berry. What would you suggest?
You're from Wausau.
Green Bay.
I would say forget blackberries. Blackberries are marginally hardy.
Well, I'm going to give it a try anyhow.
I would go probably with the Chester Thornless. Now, the problem isn't that they're going to winter kill, but see, the problem is that you have to have the canes that grew last summer to get fruit this summer, and a lot of them die back.
Right.
And so if you get a lot of dieback, you're not going to get any flowers because the flower buds are set in the fall just before they go dormant. And so if they get any dieback at all, you're not going to get much fruit. But boy, I tell you, those blackberries are really good. Now, the black raspberries should be perfectly fine, but there's a difference between blackberries and black raspberries.
Right, right. So the reason I was thinking of the Jim or the Jan is because they say that they're an ever-bearing variety and that you can mow them right off, but you don't think they would do well.
You're talking about blackberries.
Yes.
Boy.
And they're right, I believe, on your front page of your catalog, if I remember correctly.
Are they?
Or the second page.
You're taking a look here.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess Dottie slipped one in on me.
You should read your catalog.
Yeah, I guess I should. I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure with that one. I'll have to do a little more research. So what you should do is drop me an email, dick@jungseed.com.
Okay.
And I'll do a little more research for you.
All right.
Okay.
I would appreciate it.
You know, as much as I like to do everything at Junk Seed Company, I can't. We have a very good person that lays out our catalog, and she finds a lot of really neat stuff to put in it, but you know, you don't get to try everything before it hits the press. So, just drop me an email so I have something to respond to, and I'll do a little more research on those two for you and let you know.
We'll do that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Chet. And Rhoda in Wausau, we are on to you. Hi, Rhoda.
Hi there. I'm a great currant lover.
Okay.
But in my new home here in very sandy, acidic soil and flats of not far from the we have a lot of white pine.
Yeah.
Am I still not supposed to do that?
Yeah, I think it's against the law to plant currants in northern Wisconsin because it is the alternate.
Oh, really? They mailed them to me.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't have. They are the alternate host for white pine blister rust. Right. So just be really careful to watch those plants because the white pine blister rust will look like orange filaments coming out of the leaves. And if you get that, then you probably should be spraying with a fungicide.
I think these are...
You know, I think that they're a little bit lax on that now because the white pine isn't as an important...
No, it's thick in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
I was just going to dig them out and send them to my daughter in southern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Because they're young. So there are other ones that are related to that you shouldn't plant with white pines?
Any of the current family.
But I don't know what the current family has.
Well, there's several different varieties of gooseberries. And
okay,
currants, yeah, and they're both in that ribes complex that should not be planted where there are white pines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I have sandy acidic soil, I am going to do battle with the birds over blueberries.
Yeah,
berries that would be really happy in my sandy acid.
Yeah, I think any of them that we have, Patriot and Friendship are the two that I have in my garden. But yeah, you can plant. I guess what I would do is, depending on how many you want, I would just plant maybe one of four or five different varieties and see which ones do the best for you.
All right. Besides blueberries, anything else that likes sandy acid soil? Berries?
Acid soil, most plants will do well in acid soils.
good for them.
Yeah. I mean, most fruits will do very well. You know, any of the apples and pears and plums and things like that, unless it's very, very acid. In fact, the nutrients are probably more available to the plants at a little bit acidic soil than they are at basic or a little above 7.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Someone else was wondering, actually, on the Facebook page about just general care of is going to be planting some apple trees, wondering, you know,
Well, we sell smaller trees, you know, because when you're growing them in a nursery, they're grown very close together, so they don't branch very much. But the plants do branch when they're set out. And with, I guess, with general instructions on fruit trees, you want the trees to have very horizontal branching, so that there's not a whole lot of stress in the crotch of the tree when they get heavy loads of fruit. So you want branching that's very horizontal, even to the point where you can either push them down by putting a spacer in the tree or driving a stake in the ground and actually pulling them down and holding them there for a couple of months, which will set that horizontal branching. And then you want an open tree, so you cut the top out of it. You don't want a central leader in the tree, and then you get a whirled pattern of branches, 3 to 5 branches that kind of grow out and then turn up, the old rule of thumb is you should be able to throw a hat through a dormant fruit tree and not hit a branch, because you want that open. You want some of the wood that grew last summer, because I guess all fruit is basically that. Most fruit buds are set down in fall prior to the year that you're growing in. So last fall, the fruit buds are set for this spring. And so keeping the tree open, you get a much better pattern of fruit development. So, you know, just open and horizontal branching, I guess, is what I would recommend for fruit production.
All right. And Angie in Lancaster says, I need to get my soil tested to know my soil type and the nutrient deficiencies. How do I do that?
The easiest way to do that is to just take a 3/4-inch pipe and drive it in the ground about 6 inches deep in, depending on how large your garden is, 3 or 4 different spots in your garden if it's not too big, and then put it in a paper bag, and then I think your county agents can send it into the soil lab here in Madison or find somebody that tests soil. What I usually find with gardens is that once you've had your soil tested and once your vegetable garden looks good, by following good organic procedures of composting leaves and grass clippings and things like that and adding that back to your soil and doing some fertilizing, once you get the plants looking good, then the best indicator of whether your soil is in good shape or not is the color of the leaves. I mean, if your leaves are yellow and not a good healthy green, then something's wrong. Then you should look into what's happening in your soil. Most vegetables do not require a lot of fertility. The only things that I know of that you get a better crop are onions, because it has a very small root system, a couple of side dressings of fertilizer. Rhubarb is a heavy feeder. When you're establishing asparagus, giving it a little extra fertilizer while it's establishing is really good. But for the most part, beans and peas and corn and that sort of stuff, once your soil is in good shape by just following good cultural procedures, you'll have a great garden year after year. And then the only time you really have to check is if something looks wrong.
Norman in Wausau, on to you now. Hi, Norman.
Good morning.
Morning.
I got a comment on one of your other callers, then I've got a real question.
Okay.
One is that Prime Jim and Prime Jan, we tried that for about 3 or 4 years, and we live at the very northern edge of Zone 4A, or the southern part of Zone 3.
Right.
At the 45th parallel, they're just north of Wausau. And here's what happens. If you put the canes down in the fall of the year, in other words, dig it down kind of like the
right.
Minnesota tip method,
right.
You'll have canes that will flower and you'll get berries on them. But they're very late, and in our case, they never got very sweet. They always tasted kind of sour compared to the wild blackberries that we can pick.
Right.
The second thing is, if you cut them off, sure, you get the new canes out. They do blossom. They do form fruit for that current year because they're everbearing. But those are so late, they never get ripe at all.
Right.
So this was the problem. We went through it 3 or 4 years, and finally I said, you know, this isn't worth it at all. Just forget about it.
Yep. Sometimes it's time to stop fighting, put your hands up, and say,
we'll give up.
Do something that we get something out of.
Now, my question to you is, I've tried growing citrus plants here for about 8 years, and
right.
My success long-term has been almost zilch. We have currently one plant that's doing well, and that was from a seed. There were 6 plants, and when I took them inside the house in the fall, 5 of them dropped all their leaves, and so far they haven't shown any sign of revival. And then I have another plant that had died back once, and I cut it back and got it to go again. And when I brought it in this year, it dropped its leaves again, and it looks like it's in the process of dying. And I've tried changing the soil. I mean, I went to a very sandy compost mix.
Mm-hmm.
I put bark, old pine bark ground up in it and everything. I tried to get better drainage on it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what the problem is.
I can tell you what the problem is between outside and inside. When you take a plant outside, it's subject to a lot more wind, a lot different changes in humidity and the amount of sunlight that it gets. And it's not only going to drop its leaves when you take it from outside to inside, but usually when you take a plant from inside to outside, the same thing happens, because it seems like the number of stomatas that a leaf will develop is influenced a lot by the environment that it's in. Now, if you're in a low-light environment or a very high high humidity or a low humidity, there seems to be a lot of difference. And with most plants, I know my mom brings bougainvillea in and out, which is a flowering vine, and she loves to have it outside in the summer, but then all of the leaves drop off when she brings it in, and it's almost a given that that's going to happen, because the leaves that are initiated outside are for that outside environment, and the ones that are initiated inside are for the inside environment. The people that I've known that have had luck with citrus, they almost have to have a solarium or something where they leave that plant inside year in and year out, so that it doesn't change environments. And unfortunately, they like to be outside where they get full sunlight and where you don't have any cold temperatures. So, you know, in Florida and California, for most people, citrus plants are foliage plants.
Mm-hmm. All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Dick Zondag, our guest today, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you along here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Dick Zondag of the Jung Seed Company. And Dennis in Little Rice. Little Rice. I'm not sure. Where's Little Rice, Dennis?
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm on the southern edge of Oneida County, the
okay.
western side of it. Yeah, I'm about 25 miles west of Rhinelander.
Okay.
Anyway, my question is, I'm thinking about starting a perennial flower garden.
Okay.
Or even some shrubs.
Okay.
And I was looking at columbine in several different catalogs, and I noticed it's not in Dick's catalog. Where could I find it, and would it thrive here?
Are you talking about native columbine, or are you talking about the perennial columbine?
A perennial.
Okay. I thought we had it. I know for sure one of our others. See, we... A few years ago, we diversified, and so we have a perennial catalog called Roots and Rhizomes, and there are a lot of different perennials. I mean, that catalog has nothing but perennials, and so it has a much wider selection of perennials in it. But our garden centers also have columbines or aquilegia in them. So, you know, if you want to drive down to Stevens Point, we have a garden center on Highway 10 just east of
50. I'm familiar with that.
50, right. And they have a lot of different kinds of columbines there. The catalog is an expensive process, and so we do square inch analysis on it. So, you know, every product has to pull its weight, so it may not have sold enough to even put back into the catalog. But like I said, I'm sure that there are columbines in the catalog called Roots and Rhizomes. And
okay.
if you want to go on the internet and order one, if you just go to jungseed.com and click on other links, our other catalogs are listed on that site, and you can just or you can go to egardnersplace.com. That's our mall site. Egardnersplace.com, and then just request a catalog, and it lists all the catalogs that we publish, and Roots and Rhizomes is one of them, and should be plenty of columbines in that particular catalog.
Okay.
Would it be feasible to grow it up here?
Yes. A columbine is... It's a very pretty perennial, but it's not a long-lived perennial. You know, it depends on how you take care of it. If you water it and fertilize it so that it grows well, it may last 5 years or more. But it's not one of these like daylilies or hostas or things where you plant it once and then it just keeps growing. It's
okay.
It's a little less reliable, I guess, than a lot of the perennials are, but. If you fertilize it, water it when it gets really hot and dry, it should do well for many years.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Dennis. Appreciate it. And let's go to Joyce in Neenah next. Joyce, hi. Oops, let's see. Well, better push the button in order to get her on. Let's go. Hi, Joyce.
Hi. I have a question about trees.
Okay.
Can you help me with that?
Sure. What can I help you with?
In between our house and the neighbor's house, and there's kind of a ditch line between us. We're up on a little higher ground,
okay.
Probably 15 to 20 feet between us,
right.
20 feet probably. And there was a hackberry tree there, and it was real tall. It was getting into the power lines,
right.
And it was real messy tree.
Yeah, it is a messy tree. Yep.
So my husband really hated it there, having it there. So we had a power company guy come out, and he said they'd rather just take it down because to trim it was going to get all off balance and wasn't going to look good. So we had it taken down, and now what I'm wondering, we want another tree there just for blockage and so the side of our house isn't completely exposed.
Sure.
But not a real high-growing tree.
How high are the power lines?
Gosh, they're probably 40 feet in the air.
Okay. There are some dwarf flowering crabs. You have to really read the description.
Okay.
It tells you if it's a pyramidal. A columnar-type tree. And a columnar means that it grows up instead of out.
Oh, okay.
And so the branches would be more ascending. I know that there are quite a few flowering crabs that are that way. Mountain ash has very ascending branches, but that one does get flowers and fruit on it. I was going to say, without the power lines there, there's a columnar Norway maple that makes a very nice plant that grows almost straight up, but that's too high because you're going to have branches in the power lines.
Okay.
But the big thing is to read the description, and it should say columnar in it, that means that the plant will grow up instead of out. And so, I said, there are several crabs. And off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you which varieties. If I had my reference book in front of me,
columnar?
C-O-L-U-M-N-A-R.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you want ones that go up, not out. Is
right.
that what you're saying?
That's exactly. They have to have ascending branching pattern.
Okay.
And a fruit that does that is pears. Pears have a very ascending habit to them. But there are several dwarf crabs that have that ascending habit.
They ascend, but not so high that they hit the power lines.
Right, and they don't go out, so they just grow up. So.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You're very welcome.
Thanks for calling. And let's go to Lisa and Neenah next. Wait a second here. Should we go to Lisa? Lisa, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. We have a cottage north of here. It's
okay.
up near Wausau.
Right.
And we planted three apple trees.
Okay.
Two of them are State Fair, and one is another variety that was for that zone.
Okay.
And we have a decorative plum tree.
Okay.
And there's about 6 to 7 years old.
Okay.
And we've only gotten one apple on one tree once.
Okay.
And they've only flowered that one time.
Okay. Well, they're old enough that I can tell you how to do it. I can't
sure.
tell you, you know, if it happens this year, it wasn't about what I tell you to do.
Okay.
You got to do this while your neighbors aren't watching you too, because they'll think you're nuts. But what you've got to do is the plant is in a juvenile state. It's growing. They're growing really nicely, but they're not going from the juvenile to the adult flowering stage. And so what you want to do is either take a baseball bat or a pipe and then just go around the base of the tree and beat the tree. Now, you have to be careful because the plant police will put you in jail if they catch you harassing a tree. No. The other way you can do it is to take a carpet knife or a one-edged razor blade and about a foot and a half off the ground, do this in June after the plant has the leaves have come out and the leaves have hardened off a little bit, and then just go right through the bark and go about half or two-thirds of the way around the tree. What you're doing is you're creating a situation where the plant is being put under stress. Root pruning would do that too. Take a shovel and drive it in the ground. The problem is they're so happy with the environment they're in, they just don't want to turn into adults. And so what you're doing is you're putting them under stress, and any plant that you put under stress will naturally become an adult and go into its flowering survival mode. Now, it won't do it this spring because the flowers are initiated in the fall, but I can almost guarantee if you do that next spring, you'll have abundant fruit.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We had an email here from Susan, who says, after 20 years, our plants are getting sparse in areas. I've heard there are varieties. Oh, and it's asparagus. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I've heard that there are varieties that you can eat after 2 years. How do you suggest we add the new sets and know which plants are which? Moreover, when should we plant them?
Okay. I guess what I would do is if you're planting into a mature bed that is sparse, what you'd want to do is wait until you can see where the live plants are and where you've got open spots. The plants that produce cane or the spears the fastest are the hybrid. The reason for that is that the hybrids are mainly male plants. And I could go into a long spiel to tell you why it happens, but it's basically because the males don't produce fruit and they throw everything they have into the root system. So what I would do is just like you do when you're planting a new bed is the areas that are quite open, dig down probably 10 or 12 inches, probably going to have to make a trench or a hole and then put one of these crowns in the bottom of the hole and then just cover it with a couple of inches of soil. And then as the spears grow, you keep backfilling the hole until the ground is level and fertilize it and water it the first couple of years. And then you want to let the plant, the root system grow. You don't cut the spears until they're the diameter of your little finger. If you cut them when they're really, really spindly, the plant has a hard time making enough carbohydrates to get through the winter. So you've got to wait until the spears are about the diameter of your little finger, and that way you can put new plants in. Otherwise, start a whole new bed, and when that one gets going, then work the other under and use that for your garden.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea either.
I mean,
either way can work.
Guess it depends on how much ground you have to spare.
All right. Are there any new flower varieties this year, Dick, just to turn to that caught your eye? And
well, there's a lot of new hydrangeas. I mean, it seems like things go through cycles. A few years ago, it was daylilies, and then coral bells have been really, really popular in the perennials because there are a lot of different leaf colors and leaf and flower colors. And now it seems like the hydrangea is the thing that really is being bred and crossbred and underbred, and so there are a lot of really pretty new varieties of hydrangeas coming on, and so we've had several of them. And the summer was the first one, but now there's Bellaroma and strawberries and cream, and there's a whole bunch of hydrangeas. So, and of course, roses are always new things coming in the roses. A lot of new hybrid teas, if you like to fuss with roses, but there are also a lot of new hardy roses coming out if you want to just plant something that has really nice color all summer long.
Dick Zondag, our guest today. Dick is president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin, over 100 years in business. And you may have their catalogs already. If not, or even if you want to take a look at what's on the website, I would suggest you go to jungseed.com. That's jungseed.com. Larry Mueller here with Dick Zondag on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. Great to have him along, and thank you so much for listening in. Phone, 1-800-642-1234. Email, talk@wpr.org. Try either one of those. And let's go to Deb in Luck, Wisconsin next. Deb, hi. Let's see here. We got you on. Deb, hi. Deb, are you there? I'm not hearing her. So, well, let's try Jan in New Glarus. Jan, hello.
Hi. I'm enjoying your show. I have a question. In 2005, we planted an ironwood tree in conjunction with our Village Arbor Day program and our Village Arborist. And it's a small space that we have, and he thought it would work well. So the first year, it got going. Mm-hmm. The next year, it barely leafed out, and then it died. I had him come and look at it, and it died like midsummer.
Right.
So the
Oh, we lost her. I am sorry.
Okay, well, ironwood. Let me tell her a little bit about ironwood if she's listening.
Well, let's hope she's still listening.
Yeah, ironwood is a tree that likes acid soil, and may or may not be suited for a planting like that. But I guess what I would do is get some muriatic acid or something like that, and fertilize the tree with that and see if you can get it healthy with that, although she said it had died. But if you're ironwood, it seems to me is one of those trees that it's unusual that you find them. But if you do that, you should use a soil acidifier for that.
All right. There you go. And Michelle in Prairie du Sac, I believe, is going to be up next here. And let's try Michelle. Hi, Michelle. Thanks for calling. Michelle, are you there?
Hello?
Hello. We are having some computer problems here. Let's admit that right up front. I'm not sure exactly what's going on. But we've got, who have we got online here? Your name, sir, is?
My name is Jim.
Oh, Jim. Okay, go ahead, Jim.
The lady who called about the planting trees under the power line.
Oh, yes.
I have a comment for her. Northern States Power Company and the University of Minnesota Arboretum produced a book called The Right Tree Handbook, and I think she can find it online. It's one that was used for the purpose of picking trees that could go under power lines. And it gives the zones, the size, the height, the width, and she might be able to find that online to look for something to put under her trees, under her power lines.
Yeah, because if you have to whack those things, you know, if you plant the wrong tree back, they really don't look well.
Well, for safety, we don't want anything growing up in the lines. And another thing, if she just wants screening, there's arborvitaes, that she could use. So.
Yep, that's another good point. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Appreciate the call. And let's see here. Where are we going to go next? Let's try Jesse in Catawba.
Yep.
Hi.
Howdy.
Thanks for calling.
Well, I've got some maple trees that I planted 3-4 years ago.
Okay.
The branches are starting to go horizontal on me. I was wondering when's the best time I can start pruning them.
The next time it gets warm enough for you to stand it outside. Maples can be pruned anytime that they're dormant. And you want to do it now because if you wait until the ground starts to thaw out, they tend to bleed a lot. Now, it may or may not affect them, but it's better if you do it when they're completely dormant, and that way they don't bleed a lot. So I would say, you know, in the next month or 2 months, it's probably the best time. Or if you don't get it done, then I would wait until after the tree has started to grow and the leaves have matured so that it's, you know, they're not real succulent, and then you can prune again at that time. The only time you really don't want to prune is in late winter or in late summer, early fall. Late winter because they bleed, or late summer, early fall, you interrupt the dormancy pattern, and then the trees go nuts. So,
all right.
I also have a flowering crab and a few plum trees. Is that kind of the same rule of thumb?
Yeah, now the flowering crab you don't want to prune in the winter because you'll be pruning your flower crop off. The same thing with the plums, unless you're just pruning for structure and you're going to leave some of the wood that grew last year. But with those, you want to prune those basically after they're done flowering. And that way you can get the structure of the tree growing too. But you can do it in the wintertime. It's just that you're going to be removing your flower crop then.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling. You bet. And let's go to Carrie in Evansville next. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Had a question on rhubarb. Last year I had read or heard somewhere that you can prune it. You can pick it throughout the summer as long as it hasn't reached the seed pod form stage. Wondering if there is a limit to that. Causing problems overwintering them.
No, I guess what I would do, as long the longer you wait in the season, the more stringy it gets too. So, the rhubarb that you pick in spring or early summer is actually the best rhubarb. But what I would say is you should stop picking rhubarb, especially if you've been picking it real aggressively, probably in early August, so the plant has a chance to grow and to go dormant naturally. Now, okay. The seed part of it, you can get seeds in early summer if the rhubarb is overgrown. You know, if it's too large, if it's mature, it'll throw up flowers right away. If you start seeing a lot of flowering stalks coming out of that rhubarb, you should divide it.
Okay.
It needs to be divided. So.
Okay.
So all right. The flowering really has nothing to do with whether you can eat it or not. But the longer you wait into the summer, the stringier it gets, and then you want to give it enough time in the late summer and fall because any time you'd pick a stalk off, it tends to grow another one. And at that time of the year, you want to stop harvesting it.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good. I will let my father-in-law know because he scolded me last year for picking.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see here. Is Tom? No, we only have Tom there. Let's see. I've got an email question here from Diane. She's wondering about recommendations for tomatoes to be canned and made into sauce.
For tomato sauce and for canning, you want to use the Italian type plums like Viva Italia, Amish paste. The paste type tomatoes actually have a lot more solids, so you don't have to use as much for making a good paste. So, any of the paste, they're just called paste type tomatoes. I guess the one that I really like is Amish paste because it has very large fruit and actually is a very good variety even for salads and things like that fresh. So Amish paste is a really good one.
Something keeps attacking the blossoms on her pole beans. I get lots of blossoms, but most are sort of like they look like they're cut off by something.
clipper weevil, I think, is one thing that might be an insect that does that, and then just a regular garden dust would help with that. That has malathion in it. But again, when you're using pesticides in the garden, which I do, be sure you read the labels for reentry. You know when you can. You know, how long you have to wait after you've applied the pesticide to eat it, you know, and then all the different things, because they're great tools to help grow plants, but you have to be careful with them, too.
And then we have Victor emailed us about plant varieties in general. Says, as a young child, I grew all bush varieties in my 4-H garden. Wonders where they've all gone. It's difficult to find any small bush plants besides cucumbers. I'd love it if you could offer an array of them.
I guess what I would recommend he does is go to another one of our catalogs called R.H. Shumway. Has a lot of the older heirloom varieties, and maybe you'll find more of the bush type. There are bush squash, there are bush cucumbers. I'm assuming he's talking about vine crops.
So,
But that particular catalog probably has more of the older varieties. That's our heirloom catalog. So it's rhshumway.com.
Tom in Leinster, Minnesota, what's the best treatment to kill foxtail?
Foxtail is an annual weed, so by controlling it year after year, you reduce the amount of seed in the ground. But if it's something that... you know, it depends on where it is. I think a germination inhibitor would type herbicide would work really well against foxtail. But there again, you've got to read the labels to make sure that you do it correctly and at the right time. Because most of the germination inhibitors, you have to apply that before the seed starts to germinate. But I think by removing the plants before they go to seed, for a few years, you'll reduce the population, and that will help you significantly. If it's an area where you just want to kill everything, of course, Roundup is the glyphosate-type herbicide is the best thing to use.
Jan in New Glarus, we're on to you now. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I have a question about an ironwood
okay.
tree. We planted this in 2005. As
right.
part, you know, did you hear part of the...
Yes, I did. And...
Oh, okay. So it's... it was replanted in 2007. It's not been vigorous. Is this not a good tree for town?
It's not actually a really great street tree. And it seems to me, just off the top of my head, and I got to go back to my days at the university way, 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 way back. It seems to me that ironwood is a variety that likes to have an acid soil. So what I would do is get a product called Muracid or... there are other soil acidifying products that will give the tree the iron and the manganese that it needs. So,
okay.
And you could even use Muracid as a foliar spray. You dilute it about twice. You'd dilute it. You know, if it says a teaspoon per gallon, you'd put a teaspoon in 2 gallons, and then just spray it right up into the tree. And that would also help. It has the iron and the manganese. The color of the leaves is yellow.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, they're not a healthy-looking green.
No.
Yeah, see, I think that's a pH problem.
Yeah.
And so maybe getting some soil sulfur, iron sulfate, put that in the ground, and then just give it some Muracid and see if that doesn't help.
Okay, is that something I have to do annually, or?
Yeah, because soils in this area are buffered systems, and we're sitting on a big piece of limestone. Wisconsin is sitting on a big piece of limestone, and all the water that you water the trees with have bicarbonates in them, and that tends to make the soils sour again, so or sweet again. So you want to do that. At least to get the tree established.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. Deb in Luck, Wisconsin. We go to you now. Hi, Deb.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Last year, I bought 3 flowering crab trees, and like 2 days after I planted them, the deer came along and bit off the main stem on each one of them. Will they grow funny or now since the main stem is broke off?
Well, crab apples are not are not shade trees. They're grown for their flowers. And so, you know, you could do the same thing you do with fruit trees and grow them as sort of a 3-to-5 world arrangement, but you can train a new leader into a tree very easily by just taking one of the side shoots, okay, and as it starts to grow while it's still very pliable, bend it up and take some masking tape and put like 4 or 5 rings of masking tape around that that succulent branch and bend it so that it's growing straight up, and that will take over as your leader if you want to get a leader trim back into a tree. It's not that hard to do.
All right. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And we have an email from EJ who wonders, how do you develop hybrids for, how are hybrids developed for a specific region?
Well, hybrids are developed by getting plants that have certain characteristics, and then what you do is you breed them back on themselves through generations, and that creates what's called an inbred. And they get weaker and weaker, and then what you do is you take two inbred lines and cross them back together, and you get hybrid vigor. Mm. And so what they do is they, if it's for a specific purpose or a specific region, they have to find a plant that has that certain characteristic, and then by inbreeding, it concentrates that particular characteristic. And then when you cross it back with another inbred, then you get the hybrid vigor. Now, it's mainly used for instance, with cucumbers, for making a good slicing cucumber. You know, you pick parents that make a good slicing cucumber or one that makes a good pickling cucumber. And by using hybrids, then, although it may be the best slicing cucumber in the world, it's probably a very rotten cucumber for pickling.
Oh, okay.
And so that's why when you're getting a catalog, the pictures are really nice to look at, but you really do have to read the description to tell what it's meant for.
Yeah.
You know, so that, I mean, the hybridizing it's an art and a science, actually. You talk to some of the plant breeders and it's an art and a science, I guess you'd say.
Well, let's go to Carol in Plymouth next. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. I'm calling to ask if you could give some guidance on the subject of box elder trees.
Yeah.
They spread like you know how they spread.
Like crazy.
And
yeah,
if there's any way of inhibiting them besides trying to spray them with Roundup,
They're really, because box elder is actually in the maple family. And because it's such a prolific seed producer, and usually people are going after it, and so the tree is under stress all the time because it's trying to grow. when people are trying to kill it, it produces extra heavy seed crops. I guess the only way you can keep after box elders is by, you know, if they're really big, cut them off as close to the ground as you can, and then keep cutting the new suckers as they're coming up, and sooner or later it'll have nothing left to do anything with. And then be sure that you check the plantings that you have, because the seed does germinate very readily in other plantings and comes up quite easily. But the box elder bug is a really bad thing. That plant attracts them, and then they
wind up in your house.
They end up inside, yep.
Yeah, we got them. And then is there any benefit to a box elder other than shade?
You can actually make maple syrup from a box elder tree.
And have you tasted it? Do you know personally?
Yeah, I know people that do it. I can't say that I have ever tasted box elder, but I know they do use it for maple syrup.
That's fascinating. It's a very wet tree.
Yeah.
It's not good for firewood.
No, but you treat it just exactly like you do the sugar maples, and when the sap is flowing, it has the sweet maple sugars in it, and they can be boiled down just like maple syrup. But like I said, the big thing is to keep after it, and you know, by cutting the tree off as close to the ground and then keep cutting the new sprouts off, it depletes the reserves of the tree, and then the winter will kill the root system.
Huh.
There you go.
The other thing is you've got stump killers, too. You know, if you cut them off low to the ground and then paint the stump killer on it, that will also do it, but that's a chemical thing, too.
Thanks for calling, Carol. Appreciate it. Georgia in Holcomb. We'll go to you now. Hi, Georgia.
Hi. I'm calling about spraying for apple trees, for apple scab and for bugs.
Yeah.
When's the best time to do that and what's
Well, the problem we're having now is that all of the good pesticides that we've been using in the past to control a lot of the insects are disappearing from the market. We can still use a dormant spray in the springtime before the leaves and the flowers come out. Good sanitation is also quite important because the apple scab fungus overwinters in any fruit that's left on the tree that had disease last year, any leaves that are left on the ground, any fruit that's left on the ground, they actually overwinter in those leaves, and they actually explode up into the tree when it's most susceptible in the early spring. And then for apple scab, it's Captan sprayed at silver tip, which means the leaves are about the size of your little finger. Then as the buds start to open and you see a little bit of color, and then as the petals are falling, those are the three most important sprays for brown for the apple scab. And then the insecticide, Malathion is about the only thing that will control leafhoppers, and spinosad is another naturally occurring pesticide that's somewhat effective against the codling moth, but it doesn't handle the apple maggot one or the other. But it's getting so now that we really don't have a good control for codling moth and apple maggot, which are the insects that cause the railroading in apples. So I guess the red balls put in the tree, you can monitor when they're there, and then try the spinosad, I guess, is the best thing I can recommend right now.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. And Victoria in Madison says, I planted Austrian pines 4 years ago. They're doing well, but I've heard they're susceptible to disease. Any preventive things to consider?
Not really. I mean, you just plant them in the area that they like to be, full sunlight, and if it gets hot and dry, water them. I mean, plants that are under stress tend to be more susceptible, just like humans, I guess.
Yeah.
The more stress they're under, the more susceptible they are to disease and insects, and just keep the thing healthy. And Austrian pine are not any more susceptible to diseases than any of the other pines.
And water, you know, you get dry spells, water them.
You give them a bucket full once a week or once every 10 days, and then let them dry out between waterings so that the soil, so that the roots aren't put under stress too. So, I mean, that's true of almost any plant. You want to water it like it gets watered with rain, and then let it dry out between waterings so that the soil dries out between waterings so that the roots aren't put under root rot pressure.
And with that, Dick, we have to conclude. Thank you so much for coming today. Really appreciate it.
I love to do the show, Larry.
It's a lot of fun. And take a look at their website. It's jungseed.com, jungseed.com. Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. Always great to have him along. He'll be back. We'll do this again with him. Just to take a look ahead at what's coming up, Monday at 11, Patricia McConnell joins us to talk about your pet's behavior. She also has some interesting news to share from her recent trip to New Zealand. So I hope you'll join us for that on Monday at 11. Stay with us, though. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.